Hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
You ready?
2 minutes. 2 minute meditation to get centered before we kick off. 2 minutes.
All right, 2 minutes starts now. Serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Another one of my books, 20 Spiritual Lessons for Creating the Life You Want, The Way of the Wizard by Deepak Chopra. Lesson 17. Seekers are never lost because spirit is always beckoning to them. Seekers are often offered clues all the time from the world of the spirit. Ordinary people call these clues coincidences. To a wizard, there are no coincidences. Every event exists to expose another layer of the soul. Spirit wants to meet you. To accept its invitation, you must be undefended. When you seek, begin in your heart. The cave of the heart is the home of truth. Chapter 5, How It Works. I sat in a meeting in Las Vegas. It's been a few years, and a gentleman came in and he quoted a passage, the beginning passage of How It Works, but he left out a word. And when he quoted it, it made perfect sense. And I related it to it because of the number of individuals that I've worked with and I've sponsored that have, in the beginning, said, I want to do this. But by the time we got to a certain place in the work, they petered out. And it said, rarely have we seen a person who has thoroughly followed our path. And he left out the word failed. Rarely have we seen a person who has thoroughly followed our path. How many people here have completed all 12 steps? Okay. How many people have completed all 12 steps more than once? More than three times. The number gets smaller and smaller. because people are not willing to commit. They get a certain level of satisfaction, they get a certain relief. There's a Mike D thing that, you know, do you want a Band-Aid or do you want a healing? Do you want recreation or do you want complacency? Do you want a new life or do you just want a couple areas of your life to straighten out and you're going to go about your business? I knew something was needed in my life, I didn't know what. But by the time I had gotten to that last treatment program, which, by the way, I didn't know it was my last treatment program, I've shared with you that I went in there because I had caught a case and I didn't want to go to jail. I didn't know the plan that God had in place for me, that the recreation of my life would begin in that place. I just thought that possibly I'd get out of going to jail. And there was some type of inkling in the back of my conscious mind that said, maybe you can stop shooting dope. Well, that idea had been a part of my being for a very long time. From the age of 19, my first treatment program, and a couple more in between that and the age of 37, the idea that there's something wrong with you shooting dope and the way you live life. But then that was coupled with the fact of where I come from, abnormality or irregularity in living life was a way of life. Getting loaded, dishonesty, thievery, dishonesty, womanizing, all that a way of life. So basically, growing up the youngest of five brothers, that was what I knew, and I embraced that. But as a result of being attentive in arenas like this, being in that hospital, that treatment program, they had panels come in, and they began to carry a message. And stuff that they began to share had depth and weight, and it had depth and weight because I had never heard it before. And it contradicted what my belief system said was truth. Why? Because they sat in front of me, they had not used, and they had a semblance of a recreated life. And somewhere in this deal, I believe in my spirit, I wanted that. And I became willing to listen. So, there's a part in the book, I just read you that first piece. There's a part in the next paragraph that says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, you need to circle that word it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So what is it that I wanted going into American Hospital? And that little voice said, maybe you can stop shooting dope. I just wanted to stop shooting dope. That was it. I had no idea it was related to recreation in practically every area of my life. I had no idea that something mentally was wrong with me. I had no idea that physically something was wrong with me. And I definitely had no idea that the whole dilemma I was in was due to my powerlessness and disconnect from God. No idea. But something snapped in there. And it was related to this sentence, if you want what we have, Mike, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So these are questions that I ask people that I work with. What lengths are you willing to go to? Are you willing to go to any length? Some of them say, yeah. Some individuals come to me and they say, I go to church on a regular basis and I'm a devout Christian or Muslim or whatever. I said, are you willing to abandon that for a little bit until we move through the first three steps to get a clear understanding of what your problem is, what your belief in God really is centered around? Are you willing to let that go for a minute? And a lot of them say, yeah, but I've had a couple people that said no. So it stems back to the second step, that if your belief in a God is so powerful and your understanding of this God, why do you consistently turn to alcohol or turn to drugs? Why do you seek your relief? Or why do you seek your feeling good in that? Why don't you feel good with hanging out with God? Why don't you cultivate a love affair with God? Why do you cultivate a love affair with crack cocaine or heroin? And a lot of them do exactly what you guys are doing now. Looking at me like, why do you ask me that question? Because I need to be brought to a place of surrender. I need to be willing to go to whatever length those before me have gone to get not only what they have, but get what God has in store for me. He's got a plan for each one of us in this room tonight. Each one of us. A separate plan. What happens for you over the next year, a couple of years, dollar to a donut, will be completely different as to what happens to you. Individuality. So if you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, what is it? Step 12 tells you what it is. As a result of a spiritual awakening, if you flip the page on 60, having had a spiritual awakening, that's what you're looking for. That's what's happened for me. I've had numerous spiritual awakenings. You don't just have one. You have numerous, and it continues to happen. You get an understanding and a knowingness about God that continues to broaden itself. It's infinite. It never stops. So on 69, it says, here are the steps we took as suggested as a program of recovery. Well, there's that word suggested. But on page 29, it tells us, first sentence of that first paragraph, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. So for me, the steps are not a suggestion, they're directions. They're clear-cut directions on how I can recover, initially get into a process of recovering, and successful consummation of all 12 steps, I become recovered from what? A hopeless state of mind and body. What's kept you here, Mike? Second half of the first step, unmanageability. Still have trouble with personal relationships? Yes, there's days when Helen just won't act right, still. And I buy the lie that she's supposed to be a certain way. And a few minutes later, Spirit has stepped in and said, now you know you're in a delusion, right? She's all right exactly the way she is. Can you live with it? I'm prey to misery and depression. Not as much as I used to be. Can't control my emotional nature. Not as bad as it used to be. Unhappy, full of fear. Not as much as it used to be. But on some level, throughout my living, these things crop up. And what it does for me now, it awakens me to my humanness and puts me in a place of, do you want to live here or do you want to live with Spirit? And I make a decision. Decided you want what we have. I'd rather live with Spirit than live in my humanness. So I get back to center. I pull back to God. I go into prayer. I go into meditation. Still, there's days that I pray all day long. Sometimes the prayers are just thank you, or fix this, or what's happening here, or where you at, man? As simple as that. The constant is in the morning when I get up on my knees and when I go to bed at night. That's the constant. But all through my day, I'm in touch with a power greater than myself, the God of my own understanding, personal to me, to keep me. Because left to my own devices, I will self-destruct. But here in making this decision, it's required of me to take some additional steps. And they map out the 12 steps for us. They tell us it's not an easy deal. And then they get me to a place where they describe who I am and ask me, do I believe in these three pertinent ideas? And what happened for me is that I saw in this piece of work, it's a crossover that begins to happen. I cross over from a place of being a non-believer to being willing to believe and live my life on a different basis. A crossover, a place at which, or the means by which, a crossing is made. The book talks about being at a turning point. I become willing to live and turn in a different direction, as opposed to turning to drugs and alcohol and my finite thoughts, I become willing to turn to the God idea. And I become willing to make a decision based on fact from what I've seen in the first step and the second step. First step, I'm totally powerless. First step, basically, I'm fucked. I will use again. I will drink again. I will continue to be a gambler. I will continue to be a womanizer. I will continue to be a manizer. Just on and on and on. Unless some help comes and relieves me of that obsession and that allergy for whatever it is that I do. And it's very simple. The decision is based on what do you want? A decision is a conclusion or resolution reached after consideration. So you go into consideration. And you review your life with your situation to see if this is needed. And if you're a mad dog, guess what? It's probably needed. There's no out for you but that. And if you're like me, you've probably tried all kinds of outs on your own power. None of them have sufficed. Even if they worked for a while, did they sustain me? None of them sustained me until I got here, turning my life and my will over to the care of God. And they asked me three pertinent ideas. On 60, that I am alcoholic and I am addict and cannot manage my own life. Is that true for you? If that's true, that's the truth. That probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism or my drug addiction. Not probably, that no human power can relieve my alcoholism or my drug addiction, because if you're like me, you probably tried it. Probably thought the relationship would fix you, or the marriage would fix you, or the right job would fix you, or the relocation would fix you. Didn't fix me. So that's the light when you realize you're beyond human aid, that you have to get in touch with a power greater than yourself. And the way God could and would if he was sought, Original manuscript says God can and will if he were sought. I kind of like that better than could and would. Could and would leaves a if. Can and will is a definite. What's happened? God has changed my life. Three pertinent ideas. It shifts me into, it moves me into a shift and a consciousness of, yeah, I'm in the right place. I'm doing the next right thing. It says, being convinced we were at step three. Convinced of what? Those three pertinent ideas. That I'm at it. Can't no human power fix me. And that I'm willing to believe that God can. And I move forward. Why? Because nothing else worked. Nothing else has sufficed. Been around for years, sitting in meetings, got a sponsor, done some work, and I got mediocre recovery. I got wishy-washy recovery. I sit in meetings with where they carry middle-of-the-road solutions, and I don't offer the solution as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just accept what they're doing. Well, third step for me is about an anointing also and a crowning. That I get purpose for my life. When I turn my life and will over to the care of God, I no longer have a life. I'm subject to the demands and the tenets of a power greater than myself. And I begin to fashion my life in that way to listen for when God speaks. To listen for the direction, the next right thing to do. Sometimes it comes directly. Then sometimes it comes from T. Or sometimes I'll have a conversation with you and it comes from you. Or I'll sit in a meeting and they'll read a passage and the light bulb will come on. That's what that's about. Oh my God, that's where I'm at. And that's the solution. And I begin to get my life reshaped and recreated unbeknownst to me when it's going to happen. But I got to stay awake. Why? Because it's of necessity. And when I do it long enough, I actually begin to enjoy it. It's like I'm waiting for God to show up. And I become a seeker like Deepak Chopra talks about. I get on a path of seeking deeper, more in depth, a personal relationship with this power. And most likely because the main deal has been removed. What? Am I being a mad dog? I don't do stuff from a mad dog state of mind no more. I don't pursue life like that no more. But they go on to tell me in this chapter, there's some more prerequisites to making this decision. And one of them is mentioned in the very next paragraph. It says, any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So if it says any life, that means my life included. So what I do is people I work with, I send them out. Find three people to tell you how you live your life on self-will. Powerful exercise. Because me telling me is not enough. You've probably seen it all your life. Something's wrong here. Has it been enough for you to take action to change it? No, it wasn't for me. Sitting in jail cells wasn't, I didn't wake up one day and say, I just think I'll go to jail today. And I didn't wake up one day and say, okay, I'm just going to be a dope fiend. I have to be thoroughly convinced that there's something wrong up here. Sat in a treatment center in Altadena, California, and I was holding a group, and a young man said to me, he said, my people don't like you. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, my people don't like y'all. And I said, what are you talking about, y'all? He said, you alcoholic addict people, 12-step people, we big book people, they don't like y'all. I said, why? He said, because they said you brainwash people. And I looked at the young man and I said, you ever thought your little ass need to be brainwashed? I need a brainwashing. I need my mind brainwashed by God. Mad Dog. 23 tells me that. My problem centers in my mind. If my problem centers in my mind, it means it needs to be wiped away. So I need a cleansing. I found the only thing that did that perfectly for me and continues to do it for me on a daily basis is a God of my own understanding. And he does it with gentleness. He does it with kindness. He does it with love. He does it with understanding. But then there's days when I have to have experiences where I do it abruptly and I do it callously. And I keep setting myself up and putting me in harm's way, even though I know better. My mind wants to tell me this time it'll be different. We'll try it a different way. And it has never worked. Any life, my life, when on self-will, can hardly be a success. And they just go on to bring it home. They like push it. They like become a pain in the ass with it. Because then they bring up this actor guy and ask me, is that me? Is that you, Mike? Do you set the stage? Do you put everybody in their slot? And they have to act a certain way or do certain things or speak a certain way or look a certain way or dress a certain way or whatever for you to be okay. Is your happiness, your peace, and your serenity dependent on something, anything outside of you? And when I read that and I look at it, it's like, yeah. Still pieces of it there. There's no spiritual gurus. None. I believe the unmanageability in some shape, form, or fashion will be a part of my life for the rest of my life. I don't shed everything all at once. I shed pieces of stuff. And then reluctantly, there's stuff that I'll shed it, and I'll go back and pick it up. I don't know if you like me. I like misery. And I like others to suffer with me. So all that stuff is to confirm the fact of selfishness, self-centeredness, they talk about. My troubles being of my own making. Is that true for you? I get to look back through my life and see all that stuff is true. And if that's true, Mike, you probably make a decision, need to make a decision to give up your life. And in making that decision that we're going to do in a little bit, confirmed by a prayer that you say, I don't have no life no more. I listen for God to tell me what to do. That's why when Eric says, would you come up to Canada and do a retreat for us? There's no, oh, I need to, no. I'll be there. Or they call me from over the pond and say, we're having a convention and we don't really have enough money. We can do this and that and other. And can you pay for it? Yeah, if I got it, I'd do it. Because my life is not mine anymore. My life is about you, God. I've made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. You got it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
On page 30 of the big book, it says that the first step in the program of recovery is to concede to my innermost self that I am an addict, an alcoholic. Doesn't say anything about admitting your powerlessness. Mike beautifully described this idea of the great reality being deep down inside. So I have a theory, and it's just that, a theory, that when we concede to our innermost selves, we are conceding to the great reality that we're okay that he made us this way. Because I've watched a lot of people struggle in addiction and alcoholism because there is a piece of them that is resentful at the Creator or God or the power for making them this way. Now they got to do this work and they can't have a social life, and they can't enjoy happy hour, and they got to make these amends, and they've got to learn how to pray, and they've got to learn how to meditate, and I got to sacrifice my time. All these things that we have to do if we're to live long and happily in this world, being a real alcoholic or a real drug addict, I invite you to ask yourself that question. Are you okay that this is the hand you were dealt? I'm okay with it. For me, the greatest gift I ever received was my relationship with crack cocaine. It took me to the best life I've ever known. A life beyond my wildest dreams. I know that's a cliche, but that's what I have. And when I say the wildest dream is just being okay with the way your life looks. That's the dream. Most of the time, I'm content with the way my life is. That's a dream. And so as we move into the third step, we do the self-examination in the first step. We begin to turn towards a power greater than ourselves in the second step. We're anointed in the third step, as Mike said, where we are compelled to testify. But the third step, for me, has a commitment. It's a commitment. And one of Mike's teachers, this guy named Joe, who was his sponsor and grand sponsor along the way, was one of my greatest influences. And he used to tell this story about the chicken and the pig. Alright. A lot of people think the third step's about a decision. Well, let's investigate that for a minute. The chicken and the pig are walking down the road, and they're just talking. And it's a dirt road, and they stumble across this church, and out in front of the church it says, "Help feed the homeless." And the chicken turns to the pig and says, we should do something about this hunger problem. And the pig turns to the chicken and says, "What are you and I going to do about this hunger problem?" And the chicken says, "Well, we should feed them ham and eggs." And the pig says, "Well, that's easy for you. That's a simple decision to lay some eggs. But that's a commitment for me because we're talking about my life." All right? And that's what the third step's about. It's about commitment. And I'm a guy who believes if you're committed, I don't care what step you're on, you're safe and protected. See, my obsession was removed before I ever worked a step because of my surrender experience. I came to believe that the 12-step process in God was my only solution because I'd been in and out for 3 years once I was incarcerated. When the voice said go back to the rooms of CA and AA, I knew what I was going back for. I hear people say all the time, I didn't come here to find God. You guys tricked me into finding God. I get that. But see, I've been to meetings for 3 years and I've been to big book studies. I knew what the 12 steps were about. They're about developing a relationship with God. And so I came to believe before I ever worked a second step. And I committed. To it before I ever worked a step. And I was safe and protected. And I tell every guy I sponsor, if you stay committed, I don't care what step you're on, you're going to be safe and protected. Here's what happens to us, though. Our commitment wavers. Commitment goes to physical appearance. This is one that's really prevalent right now because I own a center and I watch it all the time. It goes to the diet, physical appearance, the time in the gym. And then it goes to the wife and kids or the husband and the kids. I've watched it. Commitment can't go there. I'm sorry. Commitment wavers, you lose the wife and the kids. Commitment goes to making money. Commitment, commitment, commitment. If you're willing, I would reflect back on your relapse, if you've had one recently, and ask yourself what you were committed to. Was it spiritual evolution and 12 steps and a personal relationship with a power greater than yourself? Or were you committed to something else? What were you committed to? And I have a wonderful little passage on commitment that I would like to share with all of you. It's out of this book, 365 Dow. Maiden plucks folk tune on steel strings. Crickets chant like monks. I've walked into autumnal contentment. Yet a young boy seeks guidance. One may be quite far along on the path, but if one meets a beginner who sincerely seeks guidance, then one should help without reservation. If such a beginner were to come to you, what would you say? This is what I said to someone today. The time of beginning is one of the most precious times of all. It can be very exciting and full of wonderful growth. The first thing to do is make up your mind that you're going to go to the distance. When I first began, I made a lifelong commitment. I determined that I would learn from my teacher for at least 7 years. Now it has been much longer than that, but the essential element is still the same, commitment. But commitment needs something else in order to be perpetuated. It needs discipline. This is the perseverance to keep on when things are tough. Adversity is life's way of testing and perfecting and honing and polishing a person and the person's character. Without that, we would never develop character. Rice suffers when it is milled. Jade must suffer when it is polished. But what emerges is something special, magnificent, and beautiful. If you want to be special too, then you have to be able to stick to things even when they are difficult. Commitment and discipline. These are the two of the most precious words for those of us who take a third step.
What were the last two words there again?
Commitment and discipline.
Discipline.
One of our heroes said, "Discipline is the horse I ride." Discipline is the horse I ride. And so as we take this third step, the authors of the big book, God bless them, they're just geniuses. Because you know what would have happened if we had turned to page one and they said selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of your troubles? None of us would be sitting here today. They waited to page 62 to give us that news, right? Driven. So I want to talk about being driven for a minute. One of the definitions, if you look it up in the dictionary, says compelled or impelled to steer. To forcibly take a course of action, guided by another force. When we are driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we are consumed with self-centered, selfish behaviors. In an unaware state of consciousness, we were driven through life by these forms. Let's look at driven versus making a choice. Ask yourself this question. Do I have areas in my life currently today where I'm being driven versus the illusion of I'm actually making a choice? You can identify these areas by looking for fear, lack of consideration, and reaction. Not pausing, taking a deep breath, and asking God for the right thought or action, and then responding. Quite different. The greatest trick the ego plays on me is convincing me that clean and sober, I'm actually making choices. But when I look at these choices, they're fucking insane. Right? I've watched them over these last year. I promise you. Very little, if any at all, consideration. I'm like a pinball in a pinball machine. I now understand I wasn't making choices. I was being driven. There was no choice because in self-will, quote-unquote, there's no choice. There's only the manifestation of how I think my self-will will manifest in this situation. The concept of choice comes from a state of neutrality with unselfish motives. It's an intellectual sorting out process in which I am presented with options, I consider the options, and I either reject them or accept them. There's a reason the authors of the big book don't use the word denial. I don't think it was a matter of vocabulary, but instead a deliberate effort to drive home the concept of us losing choice in many areas in our lives. Instead, they use words like illusion, delusion, and obsession. And those words are not attributable to only drugs and alcohol. Because I promise you, if you stay in this work, you're going to see the further you get away from your drink or your drug, these concepts will still apply in other areas of your life. All of these signal to a low state of consciousness in which one cannot tell the difference between what's true and what's false. In this state of consciousness, I have no choice but to be driven without choice and most likely harming people along the way. Obsessions and loss of control can be experienced with so much more than only mind-altering substances. When we are driven in life, it's very possible we're experiencing an obsession and loss of control. Look at your personal experience. What does it tell you? This is what we're going to talk about as we go into inventory. You know, but Mike, you know, so eloquently described this third step. You know, he told you about the truth. For Mike and I, we're at it. I'm alcoholic. I cannot manage my life. that only God can relieve me of my alcoholism and my addiction. That's the light. And God can and will if I seek Him. And that's the way. Now, I learned that from this man. And that's the way I teach it. But there's no point in going forward if you're not convinced of the ABCs. So when I sponsor people and we get to this point in the book, the next sentence says, being convinced. Being convinced of what? A, B, and C. If the person you're taking through the steps or yourself are not convinced of A, B, C, there's no point in moving forward. That's the second part of the third step. And then you've got this requirement of the third step. If your life is remotely okay running it on your ideas and your belief systems and doing what you want to do when you want to do it and not considering the ripple effect of what you're about to do, then keep doing it. You've got to burn it. You've got to burn it to the ground. And what I look for when I want to see where these pages are, like Mike took me through the steps. First thing he had me do was sit with this for like a week or 72 hours. He goes, just look at 60 to 62 and where is it coming up in your life? And when I sat down and looked at it, I looked, okay, I'm in constant collision with people and situations even though my motives are good. Let's look at that one today. Right? And then I began to see where I'm if you have a different value system from me and I'm in an authoritative position, I'm going to shove my value system down your throat. That's how I'm in constant collision at times. And then I had to look at this other phrase in these pages. It says the producer of confusion rather than harmony. Right? I looked for some drama. The producer of confusion rather than harmony. I'm really a self-seeker even when I'm trying to be kind. Right? These are some of the areas or the prompts I'm looking for when I'm doing this exercise. Another thing I look for is where am I wrestling with life? The big book says resting. Resting means to pull or twist violently away. You know, where am I doing that? And that's what this whole thing's about. You have to look at it because you have to see how your troubles are of your own making. The greatest statement of hope in the big book is my troubles are all of my own making. Every single one of them. I get the flu, I stub my toe, anything. The trouble was of my own making. I have to take responsibility. There are two types of people in this world. Ones who live at an effect. That means everything happens to them. They're the ones that has the shit happens sticker on their car. Right? I used to be all about that, but no. Shit doesn't happen. Right? Or there are people who live at cause. They take full responsibility for their lives. Now here's the paradox in the third step. As Mike said, when you make this decision in the third step, your life is no longer your business. So my life is not my business. I know there's something living out through me, but my conduct in my life is my business. I have to reflect on my conduct and make corrective measures as quickly as possible. That means repairing damage. I know it's a really confusing concept to work with, but I truly believe that that's what this is about for me. Is my life is not my business anymore. I abandoned that in the third step. God can do whatever He wants with me. And He's done it. Some good, if you're looking at it in terms of the ego, because the ego is the only thing that says good and bad. But isn't one of the worst, one of the most difficult things in early recovery for me to get was this idea that if it felt good, it was good enough God. If it felt bad, it was from the demon and the devil. Right? I still had some of that duality going on. But now looking back on my recovery, that experience I described to all of you in 2014 and then what happened last year, those were some of the darkest times in my recovery. They were very uncomfortable and they were very exhausting, yet they were some of the best things that have ever happened to me because it solidified that I, with this relationship I have with my power, with the power greater than myself, I can get through anything. What an immense grace and mercy there is in those things that happened to me. Because now I can go through anything with God. Period. End of story. And so that statement being the greatest statement of hope that our troubles are all of our own making is that means that the world and you folks don't have to change for me to be okay. I can get free. Because if my troubles are of your own making, I'm screwed. My troubles are of my own making. They arise out of myself. And I'm an extreme example of self-will and riot. They didn't even just say an example. We're extreme examples. I've always found that humorous. They also tell you that we must get rid of this selfishness or it kills us. And then they tell you we can't do shit about it. We have to have God's help. Okay, so this commitment has to be followed through with a course of action. Because we don't have the power to just turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. If we did, the big book would be one page long. It would say, God gets you sober, keeps you sober, have a nice day. That would be it. But we have to take a course of action that contradicts the way we've lived our entire lives, and at our core, we don't want to do it. This is why I told you I rework those first 9 steps every year as a process of submission. It's a surrender. It's me acknowledging to the Creator, I don't have all the answers. My way doesn't always work. So I'm going to try this process again and see how much deeper I can go. So this is what the third step is. It's a commitment attached with discipline and action. Otherwise, you get no effect from making the decision.
And it's a commitment between you and God. It's a commitment. They lightened up on us in all the editions of the big book after the first edition. First edition says precisely in this piece that if you're not convinced of this, either go back and reread it or throw the big book away. Original manuscript, if you can get your hands on one, read it. There's some very direct, brutal language in there. But to soften the blow, they changed a lot of the big book after the first original, after the first edition. So this is about a crowning. This is about a realization that I've been kept alive because there's a power that loves me. I'm a son or I'm a daughter of God. And I'm on a journey back home. And I get to make that and decide that I want to go back home by saying the third step prayer. Last paragraph on page 62 says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be my director, is my principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and I am his child. Many good ideas were simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom. There they give us the structure. An archway. By making this decision, I put the keystone in place. That's the stone that sets in the middle of the archway that balances the archway. So thus I have my foundation, I have my structure, I have my foundation, step one. I have my cornerstone, step two. Belief or being willing to believe. Foundation is problem and solution. And now I have my keystone in place, which is making this decision. So we're going to say the third step prayer together, all of us. And I sat here and contemplated whether we should stand and say it, drawn in hands, but Spirit said you need to make a commitment. Let's make a circle. Let's get on our knees and make a circle in here. And we're going to say the third step together. And if you're like me, you probably need somebody to help you, but you know, you know, we probably want to do it from back this way. Yeah. Come inside the circle, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Watch the candle. We're gonna watch the candle. Let's make a circle, not a circle. So if you're outside, let's get in. Right. Move back a little bit, you guys, so more people can get in. Move back, you guys. Right. Right. And if you can join hands, or if you can't touch shoulders or lock arms or something, just lock arms. Lock arms, yeah, like this. Right. All right. So I want you to think about what you're about to do. A lot of people take this lightly. They just read through this in the book and they read about making a decision and they'll say the third step prayer. But it's a monumental step when you've seen what you need to see in step one. And basically what you've seen is you're fucked. And then you're pushed into step two because you really have a willingness to live. You want to live. You want to be efficient. You want to be loving, you want to be caring, you want to be understanding, you want to live life differently. And you're alerted to the fact there is a power that can help you do that. And then they say, okay, we got something you can do. There is a power that's alive and well in the universe that will welcome you back home. All you need to do is make a decision to go back home. But it's not quite that simple, because we make decisions all day long. Unless I follow it up with action, the decision means nothing. So being who we are, you mad dogs, you got to do some work, 4 through 9. But the decision is pertinent because you make a decision. God is your father, your director, your principal. Top of 63 says you have a new employer. That becomes my life, and I listen. So I want you to think about a place you knew God was. You knew He created it. You knew He was there. And then I'd like you to repeat the third step prayer after me. Just take a moment and reflect. Repeat after me, God.
God,
I offer myself to Thee,
to build with me,
and to do with me,
as Thy will.
Relieve me of the bondage of self,
that I may better do Thy will.
Take away my difficulties,
that victory over them
may bear witness
to those I would
help
of Thy power.
And of Thy love,
and of Thy way of life,
may I do Thy will always.
The
end of the third step does not have an amen, because the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer are one prayer. So when we come back from lunch in our next session, we'll talk about steps 4 through 9, action steps. I want you to get up and give 3 people a hug.
Hey, this is my sin.